At a time, I thought that there was like this paradox of personal development where, on one hand, you know that you got to accept yourself as you are and love yourself as you are. But on the other hand, you also need to recognize that you have all these patterns that they're really not your fault. It's just your environment, where you grew up, and you need to work hard to and invest time and effort to overcome them. Oftentimes, I would feel like I don't know which way to go.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike DiZio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike DiZio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today is a filmmaker, storyteller, writer, certified breathwork facilitator, soul coach, and self-described personal development buff. He's a former personal development school collaborator, helping to articulate the school's message through video, and is personally invested in spreading personal development tools far and wide. His journey has taken him to try different healing modalities, such as psychoanalysis, traditional therapy, psychedelics, breathwork, ecstatic dance, somatic processing, Reiki, journaling, and is always on the lookout for new ways of healing. Being an artist who struggled with expressing himself and felt blocked for many years, he is now on a quest to reconnect with his art and helping others articulate their message and express themselves as well. Personal Development School listeners and viewers, please welcome Cuauhtémoc Velasquez. Hello, Cuau. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you for having me.
For sure, for sure. Really, it's a treat to have you here. Just to let our viewers know, and we'll get into this in a bit, Kwao is one of the PDS team members, a really big, important part of our team. So me and Kwao got to work together for at least a couple of years, I'd say, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think it was from 2019. No, it was 3 years, at least.
3 years? Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so we'll dig into that and a whole bunch of other things. Excited to hear more about your background and your story. And I think the viewers are in for a treat here. So just to start off, would you be able to tell us a bit about your backstory, family life, growing up? Just let our audience know a little bit more about you.
I'm originally from Mexico. And, you know, I've always been interested in storytelling, filmmaking. I was that typical dude with his camera going everywhere to family events. And I was pretty sure early on that I was gonna do that for a living, just like communication and videos, that sort of stuff. And then after I went to college, I started to feel like it was more of a job and it took the fun away. And, you know, I guess at the time I didn't know it, but I had so many limiting beliefs around my abilities and about creating. I didn't really know myself that well. So I never really abandoned it, but I never fully pursued it with all my strength. And basically, I've been moving around. I lived in Japan for about 5 years. I've always been interested in foreign cultures, languages. Again, there's always this theme of communication that I feel that has been very present throughout my life, maybe because I struggled a lot to communicate or express myself. So, of course, I have to go to Japan, right? Looking back, these are some of the ways in which I feel like our patterns sort of manifest in different ways. And after Japan, I moved to Canada, where I currently live. And I think that when you make such a big change, it's almost inevitable that you're going to go into a bit of a journey, because you are almost like rethinking what is your life about. And then you have to make new friends and you have to get a new job and you have to do all these things that inevitably make you look inwards. So in Canada, you know, I pretty much from day one, I started going to personal development. And I was so lucky and so grateful that I met Thais Gibson and Giovanni Bartolomeo, the founders of the Personal Development School. And I was actually their first employee.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you know, I got to see them start the school from scratch. Yeah. And it was just amazing when you're seeing people with a vision and literally executed. And in a matter of months, we had like the first few courses set up and just see how students started to come in. And basically, everybody saw the value in it. And from there, that was just kind of like the main, I would say, trigger for me to start to look at myself as well more deeply. Because when you're editing, I was doing mostly editing the courses.
Right.
And at the beginning, especially. And so when you're like all day hearing Thais talk about all these things, it's impossible for you not to question, how did this apply to me, right? And as I was editing, I was like, oh my God, that's me. And so that really pushed me forward. And, you know, the kind of friendships I made here, the kind of contacts, I basically just got into ecstatic dancing and breath work and all these other things that eventually contributed to my journey. And so I just continue with it. And it's been 5 years since I moved to Canada and I'm still learning. I think, you know, personal development never stops. So that's pretty much it. You're caught up now.
Yeah, no, lovely. I love that story. And that's a great background. So, okay. So take me through your sort of personal development school experience working there. You know, you said when you were working on the courses, some of the material spoke to you. And I could definitely attest to that myself as well. Sometimes when I'm watching some of the videos to vet courses or for Instagram stories or whatnot, and some of them just like jump off the screen at me and like, oh my gosh, she's talking to me. So I'm pretty sure like all the employees there have that same sort of realization, which is amazing because you get to learn on the job, right? So what I want to know from you is sort of what impact did, you know, the last 3 years have on you working for Personal Development School? If you could share any stories or highlights of your time there.
Yeah, well, I think that obviously most of the courses, or at least when I was there, they had to do with relationships, attachment style. So I would say that right off the bat, that was like the first thing that I realized. It's like, oh, there's this thing called attachment style. So I'm not stuck with my patterns and I can learn. There are strategies, there are tools. And in a way, I'm not saying it's easy. Obviously, it's not easy, but it is actionable. There is a roadmap. And that gave me like a lot of maybe confidence to know that I could, if I keep working on myself, I could eventually have better relationships. So one thing that really stuck for me from the beginning was the power of vulnerability. I really struggled to just share about my life. And basically, I make it a point to really share a little bit more vulnerable and a little bit more truthfully. And I remember that at some point, I was even sharing stuff with a person on the phone from the bank, right? There was some fraudulent charge and I kept thinking, I have a fear of this. And like, at some point I realized that, okay, maybe not everybody needs to know about core ones and all those things. But I guess that's one of the times where I feel so comfortable now talking about pretty much anything.
Yeah.
And it's a complete opposite than when I first started working for PS. So I don't think I could just give you one because there's so much, right? There's so many things. My relationships have improved. My self-awareness has improved a lot. My vulnerability, my belief in myself. I mean, it's just endless. But yeah, that's just one of the things that...
For sure. I'll mention one that I think I know impacted me and I think you got a lot of benefit from it too. But it was from Kate's meetings that she would run. I think they were every Thursday where we'd have our little team meeting with the four of us. And shout out to Kate, but she would come with these questions elicited to, you know, look into yourself a little more and introspect and to really, you know, questions that you're not usually asked on a regular basis. So these questions that we would answer every Thursday were so like, they were powerful because again, there's stuff you're not always conscious about, but when asked about it, you get to share and you get to open up and they are a little bit vulnerable, right? So I think maybe early on in these meetings, we probably felt a little shy and a little bit like, oh, okay, this is a little different or out of our comfort zone. But I don't know about you, but that was usually the highlight of the week as far as work life went. You definitely felt good after sharing and hearing other people's shares. And it just filled you up and made you feel like, you know, part of a team. And we definitely felt closer. I felt closer to you for being able to do that. So I just want to know if you felt the same way during those Thursday meetings.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think that the blessing of working for PDS was that you get to learn all these things, but also the people that you're working with, they're also learning. They're also on their journey. I mean, how could they not, right?
Right.
Like breathing and thinking personal development all day long. And I've never had that experience, by the way, to be this close with coworkers where you feel like, oh, I actually know this person. It's not just somebody that I have to deal with for sake of my job, but actually become closer and become friends. And yes, you know, those Thursday meetings, it was actually a thing that you look forward to. It was not just another meeting. So I very much miss those meetings for sure. And I miss you guys. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I really think every company should do some form of that. And it's not to say, you know, let's spend, you know, an hour doing this. We would spend the first maybe what, 15 minutes of each meeting. And I just feel it's such a big payoff to be asked those types of questions because you're with each other at work, you know, up to 40 hours a week. And yeah, you're a human too at the end of the day, right? So we should be able to share sort of our human side. And also, if you're not feeling good, you could share that in the meeting as well. So there was no, it was such a safe space where you could share exactly what was going on for you. So I just encourage anybody out there, if you're like a team leader or have your own company or whatnot, I think exercises like this are just super, super important.
And it improves productivity as well, right? Like there's a lot of data that says, you know, people who feel seen, people who feel heard, if you feel safe enough to just share what's going on in your inner world with people that you work with, then things that have been keeping the work from going forward will come up. And then you'll have the opportunity to address them.
Right.
And then eventually that'll impact productivity. So definitely. Yeah, I think it's having these kind of meetings, like you said, if somebody listening is a team leader, but even if you're not in that position, I think that you can always take that initiative and create something like this within your workplace. So yeah, definitely a highlight of my work week.
So, great. Then for your own sort of personal healing journey and your own personal development and growth, was there a time in your life where a life event happened or situation? What sort of pushed you and propelled you into going really deep into your own healing journey?
Well, the biggest one that I can think of is definitely the moving to Canada. You know, because like I said, I was living in Japan for 5 years. It was an amazing experience. I love the culture. I love the language. And eventually I didn't see myself there long term and I was looking for somewhere else. And, you know, Canada seemed like a very nice place. So I decided to move here. And like I said, that made me revisit it. You know, oftentimes in a very symbolic way, I do feel like life ends up giving you very beautiful symbols for the challenges or the tasks that you need to do ahead. So in order to immigrate here, I had to prove that I had all this work experience and medical tests and all kinds of things, which inevitably makes you look back into your life so far. So I had to get my degree translated and I had to get it validated and I had to get letters from past employers to prove that I had that work experience. So it was literally like it forced me to revisit all those parts of my life to make a check-in with myself. Like, okay, this is what I've done so far. And when I actually, you know, in order to get here. And when I got here, then it was about, okay, so my career has a little bit stagnated. So I had to update my resume and learn how to do things here and adapt to a new culture. Luckily, you know, living in Japan, it's a major lesson in adapting. So it was not that big of a culture shock. If anything, I feel like Canada is closer to my original culture, which is Mexico, but I did have reverse cultural shock. you know, which is in Japan, I was used to always ask permission and always ask for, you always had to consult things with your superiors and all. There's a very hierarchical system. So here I had that a little bit. So I had to adjust to being more independent mm-hmm. and learning to trust myself more. But basically, yeah, coming here has definitely made me revisit, rethink that I came into personal development here. That's where I would say I started my journey. So it all came together very beautifully. And yeah, I never stopped thinking about personal development, even as I left the personal development school to pursue other projects. It's now part of my life, right? How could you not continue learning about yourself? Like, you will never going to be finished, right? There's always so much to learn.
I think that as well. How could you not want to sort of continue that and continuously seek growth and understanding and bettering yourself? I guess for some people, that's not, they just think, you know what, this is sort of who I am and what I got, and maybe there's no changing. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you know, sometimes you can get a little too into personal development where it's like you're out of balance and, you know, you're always thinking something's wrong and I got to fix something. But I'm definitely with you on that one, where I feel like it's a lifelong pursuit and it's, you know, worthy of taking time throughout your day or week or month to spend time on. Because, you know, obviously, if you could look at your life before and then how it is now, you're probably so grateful and happy that you made some of those energy investments into different things, right?
No, I mean, what you mentioned about the sometimes you get too much into it where you're constantly thinking there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
This is actually something that I've struggled with a little bit. I thought that there was this paradox of personal development where on one hand, you know that you got to accept yourself as you are and love yourself as you are. But on the other hand, you also need to recognize that you have all these patterns that they're really not your fault. It's just your environment, where you grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to work hard to and invest time and effort to overcome them.
Right.
So oftentimes I would feel like I don't know which way to go. Should I accept myself or should I try to change myself? And I really did struggle with that, feeling a lot of confusion and really didn't know which way to go. And now I feel like anything in life is just balance, right? Like,
right.
You know, whenever you can afford to go forward and you can push yourself, then you should probably do it. But if you are feeling like what you need right now is just feeling safe, feeling acceptance, feeling like that, then you can give that to yourself and you can chill for a bit and understand that you're never going to finish anyway. So you might as well love yourself and learn to live with your challenges too. So,
yeah, that's very well put for sure. And yeah, there's no finish line or there's no like, okay, you've achieved perfection. You got 100% or A+ on your grade in life. It's sort of, yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, you balance, like you said, balance is key. That's it right there. So we talked about in your intro, obviously, that you've tried many different things. You love trying all these different modalities and kind of healing things and personal development tools. So you want to touch on some of those and which ones do you find are really beneficial and maybe why people might want to try some of those?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think I would necessarily say people should try this or that. I do feel comfortable saying is that people should try many different things because there's not one right approach that I think will solve all of your issues or that it's just works for everybody. So yeah, I've tried many things. I did psychoanalysis for a couple of years when I was younger, and it was definitely helpful in terms of figuring out the basics, you know, looking at the relationship with your parents, which is very, very basic. But I felt that it was very wordy. It was very much based on language. And maybe because I feel like I was good at language, I kind of like, it was very easy to bullshit myself in a way, you know. I would be struggling with something and I would go, yeah, this is very hard for me, but, you know, I'll be fine because obviously this is not how it is and blah, blah, blah. So instead of processing the emotion, I would just bypass it.
Right.
And I did that for 2 years with not a lot of healing. I mean, I shouldn't say that, but I did learn a lot, but it was very intellectual.
Mm.
So that's definitely one of the parts that it's important, right? You need to learn about how the mind works. How do we create this pattern? How do they manifest themselves in our lives? But you also need to do the processing, which is just feeling the emotion And that's why for me personally, what has worked the most has been somatic processing or anything that has to do with the body. Mm-hmm. So that includes ecstatic dancing, and that includes breath work, and that includes anything that involves your body as well as your mind, because we're not just our mind, we're also our whole body. So personally, that has worked for me a lot. So that's why I sort of recommend, but I do understand that everybody is different. And it also depends on your beliefs, right? There's people who might be very science oriented. They want to know the science behind everything. That's very important for me as well. But I should say I'm also comfortable with more alternative ways of healing, you know, like Reiki, energy work, psychedelics, which, by the way, there's a lot of ever-growing scientific evidence that it can be used for healing, but, you know, it's still not completely fully accepted. And yeah, so that's why my the only thing I feel like I should share is it's good to try as many different things and find out what works with you, what resonates, and whatever that is, use it, share it, and keep searching also, because I feel like I mentioned earlier, I'm very interested in different cultures. I do think that every tradition, every cultural philosophies from all over the world, they have something interesting to say and some wisdom in them. So you don't necessarily need to adopt them, but you could still benefit from learning from them. And I just think it gives you a better picture of healing. And one thing that was very interesting is I learned a bunch of things through the personal development school, and it's all based on psychology, science, you could say like Western medicine, I guess not because it's not medicine, but Western psychology, maybe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then I also took this course called soul coaching, which, you know, the kind of language that they use, it was more about your spirit and your soul. And they talk a lot of very interesting language that I was not familiar with. And a lot of the times I wasn't sure what to make of it. But what I thought it was really interesting is that eventually the result and the feeling was kind of the same that I used to get with somatic processing, the exercise that Thais has on the courses, or even through breath work, right? I'm very interested in spirituality and exploring different spiritual traditions. So I once went to a Sufi gathering here in Toronto, and the kind of chanting that they were doing, it was having the same tingling effect that I would get through breath work. And the same happened at the Hare Krishna temple. I guess it just makes me really excited to know that there are commonalities between different traditions and ways of thinking and healing modalities. So I think that I am a pusher for like having an open mind and trying things that are out of your comfort zone, because there'll be something for you there for sure. Even if it's the awareness that it's not for you, but it's still something. So trying a lot of stuff is good.
No, I love that. I'm the exact same way, man. I've loved living in Mexico for the last 2 years because I've got to try like Temescal ceremonies, which is indigenous kind of sweat lodge ceremony. People might know more with that term, but Temescal ceremony has been amazing. Ecstatic dance, I'd never done that until I moved to Mexico, and you'd mentioned you've done that many times. And yeah, first of all, learning different cultures and sort of personal development or ways that they do things is so interesting. And I just feel so blessed that I got to expose myself to that and be in that environment. And as far as ecstatic dance, I just want to touch on how for someone who's all up in their head and sort of logically trying to understand everything, yes, you can definitely learn a lot and with science and psychology and trying to really rationalize and make everything logically make sense in your head. But as you mentioned, doing body work and even ecstatic dance, the movement is sort of what's moving energy through you. We're thinking that everything's in our mind and maybe needs to be just solved mentally. But when you're doing things like ecstatic dance, you're moving energy, you're moving stuck things out of your body. And after you feel just, I don't know, a lot lighter and just kind of like clear and ready to go about your, you know, the rest of the day. And I don't know about you, but I feel more connected to the people that are around you that you're doing ecstatic dance with. For anyone who doesn't know, ecstatic dance is where you go. They have a DJ who leads you kind of on a journey And it's very much, there's no alcohol, there's no cell phones allowed. There's actually no talking allowed. You're not supposed to, you know, it's not like a social gathering. You can look at people and smile and dance with them and sort of enjoy the music together. But very much so, it's sort of like an inner journey. And again, with this movement of energy, it's such a beautiful thing. It's very freeing. And for somebody who's a little more repressed, you do feel a lot more open after. And I think one of the reasons why too is we can be kind of locked in a lot of the same thought patterns. But if we're moving our body in different ways, instead of the normal ways that we're moving our body, I think that opens up a lot of different things in our mind that we wouldn't normally get if we're just sitting all day or walking here and there. So I know for myself, ecstatic dance was amazing, and I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that when people are coming together to dance for healing purposes or to express yourself, mm-hmm. then it allows others to do the same. Like there's no judgment. There's no, there is shyness if you are a little bit shy, but you can easily overcome it by being in that safe space. And yeah, and I just said, you know, the thing is that a lot of these events, they tend to use kind of like a very interesting language that might not resonate with everybody, right? When they talk about the energies or when they talk about your soul and all those kind of stuff, that might put some people off, and that's totally okay. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you can still benefit from it, because let's say you only believe in science, which is completely fine. Then there is a lot of evidence for somatic processing. And I think that this is what most closely resembles ecstatic dance. When you're just processing an emotion through your body, like you're actually feeling it. And I actually did have a very powerful experience recently. I see a therapist, and it's kind of like traditional therapy. And I was just talking about some stuff that I've been dealing with lately. And eventually I hit that point where, you know, that something triggers you and you start to feel it in your body. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was kind of in the sinuses. Activation of the sinuses. So I have many theories about what that's connected to and what that's about, you know, the fear of survival because I didn't get enough attachment as a kid. That's kind of like my intellectual theory. Mm-hmm. And it is helpful. But eventually, what I felt like actually created healing was me staying present with the feeling and ride the waves, because then it would come and go. It would get very intense sometimes. It would make me cry. And sometimes it would just calm down. And I was like literally crying and smiling. And my therapist was guiding me through it and, you know, saying prompts, very subtle prompts, like think about the cost of this story that you've been carrying. But again, it was not very intellectual. It was not theorizing. It was just about just feeling that grief and feeling that activation of, literally, it was a fear of not surviving.
Right.
And I got to a point where after half an hour of this riding the waves, I got to a point where I never felt so in my body in my life ever.
Wow.
To the point where I felt like my eyes were on my chest. Awareness was coming from my whole body, not just up here.
Yeah.
So that was a very, very powerful experience. And I'm convinced that that is the actual healing. Not that the intellectual part is not healing. You do need that. It's like a prerequisite. But, and actually it might not even be a prerequisite, because a lot of people release without even knowing what that was about.
Yeah.
But you're still releasing. So that's the important part in my mind. Yeah. So I just wanted to share that because I really understood the power of getting into the emotion, and that can be tough sometimes, and because we try to run away from it, right?
Yeah.
It's painful to relive it, because as you're feeling it, you're technically reliving it. You're reliving that fear or reliving that whatever it is that you're processing. It's not fun, but it is very necessary. So
wow, thanks for sharing that like gave me chills when you're explaining sort of how that felt. That's wonderful. I'm glad you got to experience that. And thanks for sharing.
So I just wanted to pop in here and let you know we are running a 7-day free trial to everything at the Personal Development School. This means all of the courses, literally every single one, combined with the 4 live weekly webinars that I host with all of our students. You can come in, you can leave your camera on, you can ask questions, you can turn your camera off and just do audio, or you can type your questions in the chat. And we get this live interaction for any relationship or any questions whatsoever that you have. And we also have daily community events that are hosted by trained facilitators, coaches, and we have them so that you can set up communication practice and you can work through communication scripts. There's so many different features of PDS, and I would love for you to come in, try it out, check it out, see if it's for you, dive into some of the courses. You can download and print off the workbooks, and I would love to see you on the other side.
So I know you touched on breathwork, and I know you're a certified breathwork instructor. I think most people have heard of breathwork or whatnot, but do you want to just touch on it a little more? What is breathwork and why is it so beneficial?
Sure. Well, you know, humans have been breathing from day one. And I think that there's very ancient old traditions, even within yoga, you know, the pranayama and all these different techniques. Basically, it just means connecting to your breath. And use that. It's kind of like a meditation because you're using your breath as the object of meditation, which helps to bring you into your body and out of your mind. Mm. And there's many ways of doing that. Recently, it has been popularized by Wim Hof, the Wim Hof method. And actually, the kind of breath work that I am certified on is called the Elemental Rhythm Breathwork,
right,
which was founded by Giovanni Bartolomeo, who's also the founder of the Personal Development School. That's why I got in touch with it. And basically, it's just breathing at different patterns, at different rhythms. And these rhythms are designed to connect you with your body. And when you do that, that inevitably stuff that you've been carrying around, repressed memories, repressed feelings, stuff that need to come out, they will come out.
Mm.
Because it's like a very focused meditation. A lot of people struggle with meditation because they cannot get their mind still. And they're invaded with thoughts, which is completely normal, by the way. You just need to push through and constantly bring you back to the present moment. But with breath work, I would say it's a little bit easier because you have something to do, which is the breath. You're always breathing, breathing, breathing. And your mind will still go places, but you're following the prompts of the facilitator and you're basically very focused on the breathing. And then there's a lot of things that goes on in your body because you're altering the pH in your blood. You're getting in more oxygen. You are becoming a more efficient breather. There's all kinds of benefits. But basically what happens is that you get in touch with your body and you communicate and you learn about all these things that maybe you weren't consciously aware of, but they come out, right? So people sometimes end up laughing like crazy. They end up crying, they end up remembering something, they end up having all kinds of really, it's almost like a psychedelic experience,
right.
It's all on your breath. So yeah, it's a very powerful tool and you can always ease into it. You don't need to like the super intense breathing right off the start. But I just think it's a great idea to get in touch with your breath. It's just like the most basic thing that we have and available to everybody, all fitness levels. You can just focus on your breathing, practice any kind of breathing patterns. Some of them, like the box breathing, which is 4 seconds in, 4 seconds hold, 4 seconds out, 4 seconds hold.
Mm-hmm.
It can instantly calm you. And, or even in the elemental rhythm, we do rhythms based on the elements of the earth. So the earth breath is very calming and grounding. The water breath, and it goes faster as it progresses, right? The water breath is more flowy. It's just 2 seconds in, 2 seconds out. Air breath is 1 second in, 1 second out.
Right.
And fire breath is pretty much as fast as you can, which for some people that can be a little bit anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
So you get, there's so many different patterns and different ways that you can approach it. And different methods that, again, I think experimenting and finding what works for you is the best thing to do. But breathwork, again, another tool that we have.
Definitely. And obviously you remember this time, but I'll mention it for our viewers and listeners. Gio led the company. We had a company-wide call. So we had about, I don't know, 20 people on the call. And Gio led us in a breathwork kind of ceremony. And oh my gosh, I don't think anybody, a lot of people had never done it before and kind of didn't know what to expect. By the end of it, half the people are just sobbing and crying and just releasing so much emotion. And it was, I couldn't believe what happened. Like, it was actually quite shocking. Myself, I had to take the call in a hotel lobby, and you know, I really wanted to do it, and I did it as best as I could. But I knew when it came time to sharing, I was like, if I share right now, I'm just gonna start bawling in this lobby. And come to think of it, I should have just done it. Life's short, right? If you don't have, you know, room to really let that happen, just let it happen. But yeah, it was, I just remember that was so shocking. I was like, wow, this is really powerful stuff. And I think everybody should try it out at least once, because you could have a really big impact just doing it once. It's not something you need to do for years and years to become good at it. I'm sure you'd agree. If you have a good facilitator, you're probably going to have a really good experience.
Yeah. And also, I think it depends on your level of vulnerability, because I guess I was kind of spoiled, you know, working with people who are in the personal development space or the wellness industry. Every time I did it, everybody had these crazy experiences. But throughout the summer, I got the chance to facilitate at a studio here in downtown Toronto. And the people there, they were just maybe at the beginning of their journey, or they were sort of, it was a fitness studio. So it was mostly focused around fitness, but they did have this class, breathwork class that I facilitated. And people were a little bit more hesitant, right? Because they were not necessarily part of that personal development world.
Right.
So for me, it was like, oh, such an interesting crowd, because then it took them a little bit more time to be open, and it was not as intense as what I had experienced. And that's why I say it's important to pace yourself. Not everybody's going to have the same reaction. And for me, it was a great learning to know that, okay, you need to also respect where people are, and not everybody's going to be bawling at the end of it and having like life-changing revelations. But if you are already in a personal development journey, you are likely to have those, because then you're more open to it. And I'm sure that our audience is definitely primed for it. So give it a try. Yeah, it's very powerful.
Definitely. Thanks for sharing. Okay, so switching the convo more into attachment theory stuff. I was just curious, Kwao, if you, did you know about attachment theory before you started at personal development school, or was that something brand new?
It was completely brand new. I didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah. And
yeah, until I was editing the courses, pretty much.
Sure.
Recording first and then editing.
Okay. So then you mentioned, you know, or I don't know if we mentioned before, but you were dismissive avoidant, you'd say, or dismissive avoidant was sort of your dominant attachment style.
Yeah. I would say that I had very, very textbook dismissive avoidant qualities.
Mm-hmm.
But now looking back, I'm not even sure. I could have been, there was a lot of anxious as well. And I know that when you have a little bit of both, then you're most likely fearful avoidant. So I think I was not such a typical dismissive avoidant, but that was my dominant, yes.
Right. Yeah, I feel like me and you are pretty similar. Maybe you were DA and then FA not too far behind. Maybe DA was your dominant. So I just want to know, what were some of the big challenges that you felt you were having before that were sort of rooted maybe in dismissive avoidance? Do you remember any specific things that sort of caused you some problems or issues?
Well, definitely, as I mentioned earlier, the vulnerability. It was extremely hard for me to be vulnerable, and also believing that other people can meet my needs, right? Like, I would just not even try. I wouldn't even ask for what I want. A lot of it was communication, right? Like going back to the same theme, but that inability to communicate or ask for what I want was rooted in thinking to begin with that other people are not going to be able to meet my needs, or even believing that my needs were worthy to be met.
Right.
Which I think we're getting into the territory of fearful.
Yeah.
Where you think that you're not worthy of love, or your, yeah, because you didn't get that attunement or that attachment growing up, then you go, no, well, my needs are not going to be met, and you become hyper independent, and you try to.
Because we became so hyper independent at a young age, we sort of decided we got to do this all on our own. No one's going to be meeting our needs. Nobody's going to be giving us anything. Is there also the flip side where you're like, then you project that onto other people? You're thinking, I'm not here to meet your needs. You're here to do that for yourself. Why are you sort of bothering me with what you need here? This is kind of like a you problem, not a me problem. Did you have that at all in your most unhealed state?
Yeah. And one thing I completely didn't even realize until I heard about it being a trait was this need of protecting your resources.
Yeah.
So it's not that you're selfish. It's more you're afraid that your resources are going to be taken up by other people, right? Like especially your time.
Yeah.
Or your
energy.
Your energy, especially. Yeah. I think for me, that was a big one. It's like, yeah, if somebody demanded too much of my time or was being too vulnerable or too needy, then I would almost close off and push that person away because it was too much for me. So yeah, definitely that was a big thing as well. And even I should say, honestly, even with material resources, again, it was not, now I understand it was not just selfishness, but it was like this fear of people are going to get my stuff and I need to protect my time, my energy, my stuff.
Yeah.
And again, I think it comes from that feeling of like, I want to be super independent and it's just me against the world.
Yeah.
Which is not realistic because we are social creatures and we depend on each other. So
yeah,
there's obviously such thing as dependence or codependence.
Sure, sure.
But in the end of the day, we do need each other. So
for sure. We wouldn't have got this far as a species or whatnot if we weren't helping each other out. And I think a lot of avoidants too don't realize they do have their needs met by other areas. Like they think they're doing everything on their own. But if you look at it, there's so many areas in your life where you are depending and taking from others. And that's not a bad thing because, you know, we want, I guess, healthy interdependence where you're in a flow of giving and taking at a pretty equal level. But yeah, what you mentioned before is, yeah, I was so stingy before. Like I was not generous with my money for sure. I was a little more worried, always counting pennies and making sure that like, okay, I have this much money, I can spend this much. If like an unexpected expense came up, I'd get really stressed out and really upset about it. Anything to do with money was very touchy. And again, that's not, I wasn't born like a cheapskate. It was being, you know, avoidant. You're, again, you think that you're responsible for yourself. These resources that you have are limited. No one else is just going to give you anything. So I have to be very careful with how I spend these things. So that was the mindset before, but it's wonderful as you heal, you kind of see, first of all, the world sort of has an abundance of everything. Truly, there should be enough resources, food, housing, shelter for everybody. There is, but we could easily get sort of tricked into thinking like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough. I don't know if I'm going to make it till the end. And I know in healing some of the avoidant personality, going to say disorder. Actually, there is an avoidant personality disorder. But in healing that, you sort of understand that, you know what, for me anyway, I've been taken care of my whole life. I've never not had what I've needed. Why would I project that into the future? Why would I predict that one day everything's just going to be taken from me and then I'm going to have like left with nothing? So, you know, I understand everybody's born into different positions and whatnot. But I could just speak for myself. There was nothing in my reality pointing to I should be worried that I'm not going to have enough because I was always provided for. My family was always there for me. And, you know, I take comfort now in knowing, you know, we're there for each other and I'm going to be okay for the rest of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something that thinking about it that way can really help to bringing you back to reality in a sense, because these fears, this idea of there's not enough to go around, is protect my resources. These are all really just strategies or coping mechanisms or patterns that fell through at a time where, you know, maybe you didn't get what you needed, maybe the form of like attention or in many different ways, but it just, like you said, you project it onto different areas. And I think it's important to remember what the truth is. And even if, let's say, we're talking about somebody who was born into poverty where there was all these kind of situations, that doesn't mean that you can't reprogram that. Obviously, it's going to be hard there because that was what you experienced. But in the end, you know, in order not to perpetuate that, then you can definitely do that work on yourself to realize that you can provide for yourself, that there is enough to go around, and not just in that, because sometimes it's not just about money or resources. It's also about love and attention and your needs. And, you know, people who struggle with not having enough love or enough attention, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because then you continue to see the world through those lenses. And unless you do this work and realize that just by being born, you're valuable and deserving of love,
mm-hmm.
and you recognize that as the truth. I keep saying the truth because it's a very interesting term that my therapist used when I had like this powerful experience after I had get in touch with the emotion, and I felt very calm, very safe. Because in my mind, I had made the equation of not having love equals I'm not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw that equation so clearly.
Right.
I feel that wound was exactly what I was processing right then.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was able to get in touch with it and process it out, or at least a big chunk of it out, my therapist kept saying, this is actually the truth. This is actually you. You are worthy of love. You are okay. You're not dying. You are going to survive.
Yeah.
And I really felt that with my body, not just intellectually, because I knew this, right? We all know that, but we know it intellectually. And it's so important to have this distinction of actually knowing it with your body when you actually feel it. And then you realize, oh, there, I am worthy of love. There is enough to go around. That is the truth. And everything else is just filter through which we see the world that is no longer serving us.
Yeah.
And I guess the next step for me is even becoming grateful that you had it, because it helped you cope at the time, despite that it cost you so much hurt and it's a huge cost, because obviously you behave accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel that the next step is like even becoming grateful for it, but I might not be there yet. But definitely, you know, just realizing at least that it's not the truth and really feeling it has been incredibly helpful. And I think that was a big step.
No, I love that. Yeah, if your body doesn't accept it as truth, you know, you could tell yourself, I'm abundant, things are great. But if your body's not feeling that, it just won't accept that as a reality. So that's really awesome that you had that experience, sort of, you got to feel it on the body level. And that probably gives you so much more confidence and just comfort moving forward that you're taking care of. It's really wonderful. Thanks for sharing that, Kwao. So, okay, just want to talk about sort of on your day-to-day level, are there any non-negotiable rituals that you do every day? Is there anything you do consistently that just keeps you in a really good place?
Yeah, for sure. I would almost say that without the basics of just taking care of your physical body, very hardly can you move forward. I would almost say like it's half the battle. I mean, again, it depends on the person. I don't want to make general statements.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's like I can't even begin to function and just have the right mindset without just sleeping well, drinking water, eating healthy, meditating, having hygienic practices. For me, that's the very basic to thrive. And in the past, I abused substances, alcohol, cannabis, and I've been sober for a month. Exactly, like zero anything, even caffeine, because I didn't want to replace one thing with the other.
Right.
And what that did to me was that, first of all, I removed all of the instruments for escaping.
Mm-hmm.
So this past month has been very consequential because I was forced to sit with the emotions, because you can do that in breath work, you can do that in therapy, but they're kind of like always there in your daily life.
Yeah.
But if you numb them away through substances and stuff, then they're still kind of there. you're just not feeling them as much because you're numbing yourself. So
yeah.
So definitely getting rid of substances was a big thing for me. And that allowed me to just have a very clear morning routine, which involves, you know, just like brushing my teeth, washing my face, which, by the way, the face, for example, I didn't have a face routine. Like, I didn't care for my skin.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't learn about that until now. And I kind of like saw it as something extra, like, oh, you know, now I have to wash my face and everything.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And I did it very fast because I felt like, oh, let's get this over with. And now I've completely changed my approach and I almost take my time because I realize that that's what self-love looks like. You know, like taking care of your teeth and your face and weighing myself and meditating and at night journaling and meditating again, doing these things, they're good for your health, but they're also good for your mental health.
Right.
With every step that you take, with every minute that you spend caring for yourself, you are reminding yourself that you are worthy, that you're teaching yourself to that you matter, basically.
Sure.
And it's almost like that was the unexpected benefit of doing these things, because I did it for my physical health, but turns out it had a huge impact on my mental health as well. So yeah, I mean, nothing too crazy. Like I said, just meditation, journaling, even taking care of your skin can be a ritual.
And, as you were saying that, I was like, oh man, I'm missing out on this crucial thing. I don't have a face routine. I just, you know, go for the shower and soap everywhere, but I don't have a daily facial routine. So maybe after the interview, you can give me some tips on that. I wouldn't even know where to start.
No, me neither. I'm very beginner. All I know is you need to cleanse, moisturize, and protect. So that's
it. Okay. Just,
yeah, so just like clean with something that's good for the face, not like a soap or
anything
like that. Like other kinds of soap. And then just moisturize and then protect. So sunscreen.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I mean, there's a million different
different ways. Things.
But that's the thing. I don't want it to make it too complicated, because then when you adopt and you have it, it's really hard. If you start off with tonics and all these different things,
yeah,
sounds like, you know, let me just build the habit first and sure. I'll build up.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. So we're coming towards the end of today's podcast. I just have a few more questions. And thank you again, Kwao, for being here today. I wanted to ask, what is the next thing on the horizon for you? First of all, what are you putting your focus on these days? And is there anything on the horizon that you're looking to achieve?
You said in the intro, definitely working on reconnecting with my art. So right now I'm a freelance filmmaker, videography. I do those kind of things. I help clients in the wellness space and really any kind of industry articulate their message and helping them communicate, which, by the way, one dear friend of mine, I remember dearly what he said regarding this, when he said, like, your biggest pain can become your biggest strength.
Yeah, for sure.
So I struggle with communication. So now I help people articulate their message and help them express themselves. So that's my main job.
Yeah.
But I also want to put more energy and focus into my creativity, just making more creative projects. I've been doing that, but I want to put more energy into that. And like I said, spread more personal development tools in fun, interesting ways, because not everybody is as committed as the beautiful community at the Personal Development School, which are so committed. They're, you know, they show up. I think they're very well on their journey, whereas maybe general population is still not there yet, I feel. So part of my mission is, how do I make these tools ever more so relatable and easy to adapt and even attractive or even trendy? Or, you know, can you imagine if personal development became trendy and people did it just to be cool? Then a lot more people will be on their journeys.
Sure.
So yeah, that's part of kind of like my mission. And on a side note, I am also getting into the whole expedition cruises and expedition trips promos. I'm going to Newfoundland in October on a cruise ship to make promo videos about their trip. And that's just mainly because I feel like being in nature is such a, it's also one of those hacks where it's like, if you're in nature, then you will be healing, even if you don't do anything else.
Right. Yeah.
So I just spent 5 wonderful days in Vancouver Island, and that was incredibly good for my mental health. So I figure if I start to search for gigs more in the space of going to the North Pole and going to these beautiful natural spaces, that would also help my mental health a lot. So that's where my career is headed, I feel a little bit. But like I said, I'll always be doing personal development work, and I'll always be in this space, and yeah, just helping myself and others, I think.
Yeah, inspiring others for sure. Okay, so before we wrap up today, is there a tool or a strategy or something you want to leave with our audience that maybe they could use in their everyday lives?
Well, we mentioned a couple, meditation, or obviously, I think meditation is the one that I would, no matter who you are, no matter what you're going through, will help you. Like, I do have that faith in it. It's also been extensively proven
Sure.
science. So meditation, not all meditations are for everybody, but maybe find one that works. And just as a bonus, I would say journaling. I never thought how big of an impact journaling would have on my life. And it took me a while to develop that habit, but now it's a major keystone habit that I think really helps you process the day, put it all on paper, and then go to sleep, and it'll even improve your sleep quality, and it's really good for you. So journaling as well.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks for sharing. And then, are there any services you're offering these days? Anything you want to let the people know about as far as offering services or teaching or whatnot?
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm a videographer. I make promo videos. I make content for social media. So if you have, I mostly work with wellness entrepreneurs, but like I said, I'm expanding also to expedition trips and ideally something that has to do with personal development. I always love working with people that are making a difference. That's kind of like what I offer. In addition to breathwork facilitation, one-on-one, and for events. And soul coaching as well, which soul coaching is, it's not so much therapy because you do talk a little bit, but then eventually the whole point is to get into the emotion and do that somatic work. So the somatic work is what I really think where it's at. So I'm always open for coaching sessions and breathwork sessions and helping you crafting your message if you have a business or doing something in the wellness space. I'm happy to help.
Oh, that's amazing. Awesome. Last but not least, how can people get in touch with you?
So you can check out my website for my film stuff. That's CUAUHTEMOCVLAZQUEZ.com. That's a mouthful. I'll just write it
We'll put
somewhere.
that in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, thank you. And my Instagram is CUAUVL on Instagram. And yeah. So feel free to say hi.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I know I've seen and witnessed your growth over the 3 years from the time I met you until, now, let's say, and it's been really fun to watch and see you sort of grow, evolve, and just, you're an inspirational person, and I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of this conversation. So I just want to thank you for being here today.
No, thank you, Mike. And it felt like those old days on the Thursday meeting was just like sharing. And no, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about myself. That's always nice.
For sure.
So awesome. Thank you.
Okay, take care, Kwao. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and until next time, good luck on your healing journey. Thank you.